my writing voice is still very much informed by the fanzine culture. And also things like Viz as well, which I discovered when I was sort of 15 or 16 and just thought I was going to burst just reading Finbar Saunders and Billy the Fish. And I actually thought I might legitimately have a reason for not doing games because I might have to go into the sick bay.
Hello and welcome to Outlines, a podcast about sport, stories and the media. My name's Owen Connolly. Hope you're well. It is great to have you listening. It's a crowded world, sports media. There's a lot of stuff out there and a lot of the stuff is a lot like the other stuff. But there are still some people who can set themselves apart a little to produce original, distinctive work and find their own particular voice. And I think our guest this time really does fit the bill in that respect. For about the last decade, David Squires has produced regular cartoons for The Guardian that poke fun at the excesses of football, its culture and its commerce, while also finding time to celebrate its deeper charms. Through sharp writing and a singular art style, he's chronicled some of the biggest and the oddest moments of the past few years, pulling a memorable cast of characters from the players, coaches, owners and officials of the Premier League and beyond, and even finding more poignant and reflective notes when he's needed them. His work on football has also appeared in Germany's Elf Freunde magazine and French sports daily L'Équipe, and he's created series on film, politics and culture. I spoke to David about his career, his process and his influences, what he changes, if anything, when he approaches different audiences and subject matter. There's a bit on the stories behind fan favourites like Emo Mourinho and a hip young Roy Hodgson. He talks about what might be next for him and why he may owe it all to Billy the Fish. Some fun stuff in there from a talented guy. Quick request as ever before we get started. If you are enjoying the podcast, then please do let people know. Subscribe, rate and review on your platform of choice. The social media details are in the show notes too. If you're new, by the way, why not go back and check out some of the episodes we've done so far? It's well worth it. Great conversations with some very fine operators. And here's another one. This is David Squires. I mean, there's always someone when you're doing these things between the UK and Australia, someone always kind of has to comprise. I'm not sure who has. Maybe you're kind of getting to the end of your working day there.
5 o'clock is perfect time. And being in Australia, I mean, I don't want to sort of play up to the national stereotype, but I did think, is it professional to have a beer while I'm having, and I didn't, I've gone
definitely,
for water.
I think it would be a massive cry for help if I had a beer during this, because it's about 7 in the morning here.
But you've got 2 young children, so I think people would empathize and completely understand.
What's your kind of working week like? Because you're turning a cartoon out for The Guardian at least once a week during the football season, and you've got other projects as well. Like what's your week? How are you kind of turning over in your head what you're going to do for the following instalment?
Yeah, I mean, I've got sort of quite set deadlines each week, so it's pretty structured, and I think not that I'm too comfortable in that structure, but if anything even slightly diverts from it, then it throws me. So on a Monday and a Tuesday, I'll sit down and I'll write the Guardian cartoon. It generally takes 2 days. It used to take 1 day, but I think maybe because I'm getting older, now it takes 2 days. And really, I like to, by a Sunday afternoon, I like to have a good idea of what I'm going to approach and, you know, what subject I'm going to do and how I'm going to tackle it. Sometimes, like if there's a big game on a Sunday, which will say, for example, if, I don't know, Manchester City are playing Liverpool on Super Sunday, then that's sort of usually 1 or 2 a.m. on Monday morning here. So I'll get up at 5 or 6 and watch it on delay and try not to look at any sort of social media. Even though it's, you know, been my job for a long time, I'm still a football fan and still want to do the the likely lads thing of avoiding the score, so you enjoy it as well. Sometimes, I mean, obviously with the rounds of fixtures after European weeks usually means that there's a whole load of fixtures on a Sunday, so I might have to get up even earlier and try to rattle through a few of those. But I'll be honest, I don't watch the full 90 minutes of every game. So if I don't know, Wolves are playing Brentford, just to pick two teams out of the hat, and I'll have a sly look at the score. And if that's nil-nil, I mean, firstly, that would be a good result for Wolves these days. But I think, okay, I can probably get by with the 10-minute highlight package, or maybe even the 3-minute one. So yeah, Monday morning, I'm sort of catching up with the overnight football. But generally, by the time I'm doing that, I would have already had an idea for what I want to talk about. And then yeah, it takes 2 days to get that done, and then it's a matter of sending it off to the Guardian. And then there's occasionally a bit of back and forth with the lawyers. I've had a fairly decent run of late. I've got an idea where the line is now after doing it for so long. But there are still some subjects that are sensitive. And then yeah, I do that. And then my other jobs. So every fortnight, I've just started a new thing where I'm working for the film and culture magazine, Far Out. And I've only been doing that for a few weeks. And once a month, I do a cartoon for Elfreunde in Germany, which I've been doing that for, well, coming up for 10 years. And then during the A-League season, I do a fortnightly cartoon on the A-League as well. So generally sort of works out that I do two to two and a half cartoons a week. And yeah, generally they will take a couple of days to do.
And had you always, I mean, you'll be familiar to a lot of people from The Guardian, and there might be people such as myself who remember when you were working independently. I think it was around the Brazil World Cup that your stuff started to kind of break out. Had you always had the format that you do now, these sort of one pages in mind and the sort of story led cartoons? Was that always the way that you wanted to approach it, or had you played around with the form a bit before then?
Kind of fell into it in a way. I trained as an illustrator, and that's really what I wanted to be. That's what I studied at uni, and I mean, it shows how old I am that when I graduated, the internet didn't really exist. I think I remember not long before I graduated, there was one computer which had the internet on it at Cardiff Uni. Or at the University of Wales Institute, comma Cardiff. You can always tell you're a high seat of learning when there's a comma in the title. And yeah, I remember seeing the internet for the first time and not really understanding it. But anyway, so I graduated, and then it was a job of taking my portfolio door to door and trying to get gigs with magazines and publishers and all the rest of it. The problem was, as I say, I'm at heart a football fan, so nearly everything in my portfolio was related to football in some way. So even though you would hope that, art editors and art directors could see, oh, he can paint and draw on any subject, most of my portfolio was about Alex Ferguson, Kevin Keegan, and whoever was, in the headlines in 1996. So I did that for a while, and honestly, I fell out of it. I moved to London. I got a full-time job there, working in the ticket office at West Ham, and that was sort of 6 days a week jobs. It didn't really leave much time for creative endeavors, and then I took various other jobs. And it's probably only when I moved to Australia in 2009 where I didn't really know anyone here, so I suddenly had a bit more leisure time. And so I started drawing these. It would take me a week really to do a painting, but instead I started doing these very quick one panel cartoons about football and about the way that I felt about football. And I had sort of earlier in my life done a few things for fanzines. I'm a Swindon fan, and the first thing I had published was in the Swindon Town fanzine. I just felt that I wanted to express how I felt about football and its increasing commercialism, and the things that now looking back seem quite innocent because it would have been like 2010, and that seems like a more far more innocent time considering where football is now.
Yeah. Not when you think about it for too long, but yeah.
So I started just sharing those online. By then,
Yeah.
I knew what the internet was, and social media had made it a bit easier to share your work. And I'm glad to hear that you were in there from the start. Yeah, you're a lifer.
Well, I can remember people sharing stuff on the Dear Departed Twitter
Yeah.
around that World Cup, and that was probably, it wouldn't have been the first World Cup that was heavily Twitterified, but it was the one where basically any football writer was on there, and it was funny times a day, so lots of second screens and stuff.
Yeah, that's right. And it was during that World Cup that I decided I still had a full-time job in a completely unrelated field. And yeah, it was during that World Cup I decided just to do one quick drawing a day and something topical. And yeah, Twitter, I sort of owe it all to Twitter, which now is a terrible thing to say. Think of the people now who are saying they owe it all to X. So yeah, and that really sort of it grew from there. And wasn't long after that tournament that the Guardian got in contact and asked if I'd like to do a weekly strip for them.
Yeah.
And then that first season I was doing it, I still had the full-time job, so it didn't leave me with much time to do anything else. But then I got made redundant, so I was able to do the cartoon thing full time, and luckily still clinging on, still just about making a wage from it. So
So I mean that's about a decade now. I mean, what do you think it is about modern football that's such fertile territory for this kind of thing?
like there's so much to satirize. There's so much to be, I guess, angry about. Angry is probably too strong. Well, actually, angry is appropriate for some things, but they're on a sort of more innocent level. There's still plenty of things that sort of take the piss out of. There's always someone who's making a fool of themselves. I've always enjoyed ridiculing or satirizing the hyperbole that surrounds football. Right back to when I started these sort of things in 2010, 2011. And I think over that time as well, we've become more conscious of who owners are. Like you never used to think about who an owner of a football club was, really. It's very rare. Like I sort of got into football in the 80s and didn't really know who anyone was, apart from maybe, Robert Maxwell or Alan Sugar or that kind of thing. But yeah, there's always a sort of conveyor belt of new characters who come along. I'd say I remember once Harry Redknapp stepped away from management. I remember thinking, oh, I wish he'd come back. What am I going to do without Harry Redknapp? But there's always someone else who'll come along, like Jose
Yeah.
Mourinho. And when he seemed to have been on his way out, sort of in the autumn of his career, and I'm thinking, what am I going to do when someone else always comes along.
Yeah. I mean, we'll come on to that kind of the kind of character stuff that you've woven in down the years. But what's your goal when you're starting a new one? So take yourself back to sort of Sunday of this week, when you're, outlining an idea, what are you trying to get to? What makes for a really effective cartoon?
It really depends on the subject that I've chosen. In most cases, my primary objective is to make it funny or to make a serious point through humor. At other times, if I'm doing a cartoon about, say, if someone's died or if it's one of those tribute cartoons, then humor isn't the first go-to. It might have touches of humor, it might touch on lightness. But yeah, for the most part, my aim is to make it funny. Believe it or not, there might be people listening and go, really? But yeah, that's always the starting point.
Yeah. And do you start with the script? Do you write it first, or do you have images that you think I've got to get that in there somewhere, and build around that?
Again, it's both. I have such a loose script. I will always start with sort of a Word document and do sort of a bit of a brain dump. And it starts out like such an unfocused blur of ideas. And then over the course of the day, it sort of gradually tightens. But yeah, on other occasions, there might be, say, two or three panels, visual ideas that I have, thinking, okay, that's the basis, that's the starting point. So for example, this week I did one about Ange Postecoglou being under pressure at Forest already, and it was really based on his press conference after the last game when they lost to Newcastle, which contained plenty of Angeisms. And yeah, I had this idea of him being like the Black Knight from Monty Python's Holy Grail, I think, is it? Yeah. So I just had the idea of taking a few of those quotes, and where he's sort of talking about how the situation can be retrieved and isn't lost, and there's nothing wrong with struggle and hardship. And I wanted to set that against, the Black Knight gradually losing his limbs. And so yeah, that was really the starting point for that. It's kind of sort of intuitive that the way that I work. It's very rare that I think, okay, I know how this is going to go in each panel, and I've written the whole script, bullet points, and bang, 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 and I can. I mean, that's the absolute dream. That's great, and I do love that. If I'm walking the dogs on a Sunday afternoon, I think, okay, I've got this a really solid idea. I know it's going to play in each panel, and I can get it finished in, a day and a half, and it's smooth going. But that happens, I think, probably once or twice a year.
I mean, how much do you communicate with colleagues at all? Do you talk about what stories might be percolating through in a given week, or do you just are you completely? I mean, for one thing, if we're talking about the Guardian anyway, most of your Premier League colleagues are asleep when you're awake, and so on. But do you prefer to sort of just completely let it come through, whatever your observations are in a given weekend?
There are a few times where I will send, I'll contact James Dutt, who's my editor at the Guardian, and I'll say, look, I'm thinking of doing this subject. Usually, if it's something, a slightly controversial subject, or maybe something which is a bit more obscure, then I might run that by him. But generally, they're great, and they're just happy with whatever I deliver on a Tuesday. But you're right, I do have to try and kind of have to think about someone else might be right in this. I have to make sure that I'm not crossing the streams. The worst thing is if I've written a cartoon on a subject, and then about 10 minutes before I'm about to send it, I see that Barney Ronay or Jonathan Liu have written this absolutely amazing piece, an 800-word piece that is beyond anything I could do. Oh, Christ. It nearly happened this week. I did think about drawing a cartoon about the return of the long throws, and still might return to it. And then just before I usually file, I saw that Barney had written a piece on it. And I sort of thought, thank God I avoided that. I headed that one away. So yeah, and that is a challenge during major tournaments where everyone is watching the World Cup or the Euros, and everyone's online making jokes. And there have been times where I've filed my cartoon and then looked online and seen, like, oh yeah, someone else has beaten me to it. But
It's like
you kind of
the
have
late
to
night.
just let it go.
Yeah, it's the late night television thing, isn't it? Where everyone's already told a joke somewhere by the time someone's written it and had time to record it. I mean, I guess you kind of get around that through your style. If you did one panel cartoons, the chances of you repeating something or, having a real overlap with something that's occurred somewhere else in the culture is a bit higher. But who are some of the people that you look to when you were developing your style? Who are some of your influences, either on the sports media side or on the cartoon side?
Probably the voice, I think, is very much through the filter of fanzine culture. That's probably where I enjoyed most football writing when I was, learning about the game, and even things like 90 Minutes when I was a teenager. Because before that, before fanzine culture, I mean, fanzine culture really informed a magazine like 90 Minutes, with that sort of fan-centric view of the game and the sort of funnier slant things. Before that, it was all pretty dry, and I mean, I loved it. I didn't know any different. But you read in Shoot and Match and newspaper reports. Probably at that age when I would have been a teenager, it's probably just sort of, reading the tabloids for my newspaper stuff. I'd love to say that I was this precocious 15-year-old who was, reading the Guardian and the Times and reading their match reports. But let's face it, I was, looking at a copy of, Dad's Daily Mirror kind of thing, and there's nothing wrong with that at all. But yeah, so you had that, and then you had on a Saturday, football focus, and actually Saint and Greavesy. There's some humour in there as well, which was great. But yeah, really, this I suppose it still is my voice, my writing voice is still very much informed by the fanzine culture. And also things like Viz as well, which I discovered when I was sort of 15 or 16, and just thought I was going to burst. It was like, I remember the very first copy I found. I was skiving off swimming at school, and someone had left a copy in the sort of bit you had to go and sit with all the other malingerers, and there was a copy of Viz there, and just reading Finbar Saunders and Billy the Fish, and I thought I generally thought.
Billy the Fish was the sort of Roy of the Rovers
Yeah, it's
takeoff,
just
wasn't
amazing stuff. I actually thought I might legitimately have a reason for not doing games because I might have to go to the sick bay. And yeah, like all of us, I think like most sort of people who come up in British culture of the 80s and 90s, I just adore comedy. And still now, which I'm not saying that's a thing that's unique to Britain. I'm not going to go out and start, putting flags on lamppost or anything like that, but yeah, it's something we take really seriously, I think.
And I suppose the other thing with fanzine culture is, people might not necessarily buy fanzines outside the ground with the same religiosity that they used to, although some people still do if they've got a thriving one there. But the culture is kind of, because of the internet, there's more of it everywhere, sort of thing.
Yeah, and I would say that another. Back to, I mean, once the internet came along, a lot of fanzines moved online and became, fan forums. And the one that I was obsessed with and would spend out days, weeks on was the When Saturday Comes forum, where there were some absolutely amazing writers as well. It was a learning experience. So you had someone like Ken Early on there, who's a regular poster on there. Just amazing, just watching him arguing with other people about, Liverpool's 2004 team. And then you had music writers as well, people like Simon Price and David Stubbs and Taylor Parks, all brilliant writers. It helped that I had a job that I, at the time, that I didn't really care about, and my boss couldn't see my screen. But I'm sure I'm not alone in being the only person who was just spending, well, I mean, as we know now, a terminal amount of time online.
A big feature of your work, you mentioned it before, is these sort of absurdist characterizations of figures in football. And not everyone gets the treatment, but I mean, you mentioned Jose Mourinho, who's been emo-ified, Roy Hodgson as a sort of street character, not as an urchin, as in, like, big jackets and hats and all the rest of it. Mikel Arteta is a Lego man, and Wayne Rooney is Henry VIII, this sort of stuff. Where do you develop those ideas? Does that just come, I've got to represent this person this week, and then you really like it, so you go back to it? Or are they things that you sort of workshop elsewhere and then introduce? Or how do you approach that?
It's pretty organic, I'd say. So, as you suggest, I do it. So try it once, probably just for one joke, and if it lands, if it gets a good reaction, you can sort of generally tell from the feedback if people have enjoyed it, and if I enjoy it as well, then I'll keep going back with something like Roy Hodgson. I think I started drawing him like that during the right at the start of the pandemic, when there was a rumor going around that the over 70s would be banned from stadiums for health reasons. So I had this sort of extended bit about him pretending to be younger than he was by dressing younger, but also by trying to pass off knowledge about early 90s shoegaze bands. So kind of getting it wrong. And so that kind of stuck. He's just, yeah, he's fun to draw wearing, a cap back to front and a global hypercolor t-shirt or whatever have you. And also I guess the puns of the band names that you could play with. And
Yeah.
the same with Mourinho. That was part of it. And Emo Mourinho, that character came about because he was just behaving like such a sulky teen. And would have been I guess the last season when he was at Manchester United. He'd been off to the Russia World Cup. I think he'd been working for Russia Today and having a lovely time as a guest of Vladimir, and then pre-season started and he's back with Manchester United and they're on a tour of the US. And I just kept seeing clips of him in this pink hoodie, which must have been, United's training gear at the time, just complaining about being there and not having any players. And I think he had a I can't remember the player he had a go. Maybe it was Anthony Martial had gone home to be with, to witness the birth of a child. And, Mourinho had the hump about that. And then the season started and United were pretty terrible. And it just seemed to, his mood seemed to darken every week. So that became a long-running character, mostly because of him. And yeah, I think people enjoyed the aspect of the puns on, certain emo bands that they might remember, mixed with United players, rival skulls rather than rival schools, I think. There's some quite deep cuts in there. And I'd like to say it was all my knowledge, but I really bled the Wikipedia page of emo bands of the early 2000s dry. So I was kind of glad when he moved on because I'd done it all.
Yeah, well, I guess you put something like that out into the world. The Roy Hodgson one is a fun one as well, because you couldn't have done that when he was England manager, because the kind of context around him is so different. But when he was at Palace, he was a sort of, he became a much cuddlier, more celebrated, kind of cherished figure, because he was kind of coming into the winter of his career and all the rest of it. But you, yeah, I guess you there's something that you've thought, and then, I suppose you get the feedback from the community and your editors and all the rest of it, and you think, I'm onto something here.
I'll go with it. Yeah. Roy especially has such a unique appearance. Physically, such an interesting looking man. And I can sort of draw him from memory. I know that the line of the bridge of the nose and then the top lip kind of goes in and then the jaw comes out. He's just sort of got this very unusual sort of throwback, almost like a teddy boy kind of. I think it's the hair as well. He's always had brilliant hair. I hope I've still got such a, impressive bouffant if I reach his age. And the way that he's, really his career as well is astonishing. The places he's been and and worked and yeah, that looking at what he how he appeared in the early 90s, where he had this beautiful brown helmet of hair, looking like he could be, sipping an espresso on a Vespa, just a dude.
Do you find yourself drawn to people who are more fun to drawn to people, more fun to draw?
Yeah, I guess sometimes I don't want to sort of take the mickey out of anyone's appearance. And I don't think that the way that I draw people really does. I don't really
No.
accentuate
Yeah.
features in that way. But I do think someone like, oh, do you remember this would have been about 8 years ago when the Notts County owner accidentally tweeted a photograph of his own penis while he was trying to make a
Don't
point.
remember that.
He was trying to make a point to the fans about loyalty or something. Like they were all in protest about it. I mean, the other thing is his name was Big John. And then he took a screenshot of some of the abuse he'd been taking, I think, and accidentally included a photograph of his genitals. And he had quite an unusual appearance as well. I mean, his face. I didn't study the other. The other thing, that all seemed fine from what I can tell. But yeah, I mean, But yeah, obviously there are some people who are fun to draw, mostly because it's more a combination of their personality. So someone like Klopp, who would have, he's got these amazing teeth, and was sort of disappointed when he lost his glasses. But they're all that. There's been a really bad run recently, though, of bald managers with beards. It's really hard to. Like, if I'm drawing Maresca sometimes, it just naturally turns into Guardiola. And I'm like, oh, this is really hard. I need to find, I haven't quite found a way of adding something that differentiates them easily,
Yeah.
like a quick visual clue.
If he keeps that odd ski jacket thing from last weekend,
Yeah.
that'll probably help.
Were the trousers matching? The trousers were matching. Were they ski trousers as well, or was
I'm
it
not
just.
sure. It was a fantastic. I mean, it was very windy here on last weekend, so he's obviously he was well equipped.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know that he was expecting to get that much exposure of it when he was sprinting down the pitch. You work across, I mean, you mentioned Elfriede and some of the work you do in film. You've had work in places like L'Équipe in the past as well. And do you find yourself tailoring to different sensibilities? Do you talk with the teams there about what works in those cultures, or do you just kind of do it, learn about the the particulars of what people are talking about,
Yeah,
and just do your own thing?
I just kind of do it. Well, with someone like Elfriede and L'Équipe, who I was working with until very recently, we would agree on a subject, and then I'd go off and I'd write it, really still in my voice. I wouldn't really change or moderate anything, because I think what's funny is funny. Or
Yeah.
and then they translate it, and I think naturally there are just the way that language is structured, but I'd always try to have the funniest word as the last word of the panel, and then set up the joke. But the way that French and German is, maybe that funniest word sits in the middle of the sentence. What I found with sometimes when I was working with L'Équipe, I like to set up the joke, set up the visual, and then present the visual. But often the translation, this is really boring, I'm sorry, but often the translation would be a description of what was coming in the image,
Right.
you see?
Yeah.
So I'd feel that it would slightly detract from it, but I wasn't too hung up about it. But occasionally I think, oh, that's a bit of a shame. But yeah, but generally I think that the sense of humor is broadly similar. Like, I think from working with Elfriede for a while, I think they've got an enjoyment for the dark sense of humor as well, which is somewhere that I like to play. So
Yeah, they're kind of somewhere between 442 and when Saturday comes, sort of Elfriede in terms of their positioning, right?
but just in terms of like the German sense of humor seems to be kind of similar to the British one, and that old cliche about Germans not having a sense of humor just doesn't, it's just bullshit. So
Yeah.
although if they find my cartoons funny, then maybe there is something in them not having a sense of humor.
The other thing you're currently doing cartoons on film. You've done series on politics in the past. How do you find that those settings compare to sport and to football?
I'm more comfortable doing the football stuff because it's been my obsession for, I mean, really as long as I can remember. But again, if something is funny, then it translates. I think I definitely have developed a writing voice. And sometimes I get sick of that voice. Like yesterday when I was drawing my cartoon, I was like, I've had enough of David Squires. I just can't hear this, anymore. But yeah, I think generally if people enjoy my stuff, then they'll go with me and read what I have to say on other subjects. I don't think that football exists in a vacuum as well, and I don't think that football fans only like football. I'm sure there's some. I'm sure someone like Mark Goldbridge, maybe, or at least that's what he presents. I think we're all interested in other things. We're all interested in politics, film and TV and music. It all plays in, and those are the things that I like to include in my football cartoons, and
Yeah.
I can't help but referencing football while I'm writing about politics and music and film either. It's
Yeah.
all connected.
Yeah, I mean, one of your most celebrated pages was your Arsene Wenger tribute, which is just an extended riff on the last reel of Shawshank
Yeah.
Redemption.
Yeah, I mean,
Which but people got it because, yeah, like you say, none of this stuff kind of exists on its own terms. It's all interacts with something else.
I mean, there have been times when I've got that wrong and I've gone for something maybe slightly too obscure and it's just completely flopped. But generally I try to go with something that people will recognize.
Yeah, the other thing that you, I mean, again, you hinted at it a bit earlier, but you know, you've done some very well received stuff, particularly when someone's passed, or you know, or when there's an anniversary of a tragedy or something like that, where you've gone a completely different direction. You've been much more reflective, and you know, there might be some humor in the sense that it's kind of warm, but it's not. You're not trying to be funny, basically. How do you approach those weeks? How do you, what makes you think? Is it just something that you personally reflect on and you think this demands this sort of tone from me this time?
Yeah, I think with those ones, often try to make them more visual, sort of minimal text. I'll often try to use the words of the people themselves. So when someone passes away, say like when Bobby Charlton died, like what an amazing story. It's an insane story. What he went through to survive a, you know, a plane crash and then be to A, come back and play football. I mean, to survive the plane crash, to come back and play football, to win the World Cup, European Cup, astonishing, but was always, you know, washed with this sadness. And so for that one, I decided to use his words from his autobiography. And also at the time, there's everyone is writing about the player, about Bobby Charlton, and just some
Yeah.
great writing, great obituaries, like really moving pieces that I don't think I compete with. So you know, I prefer to present it in a more visual fashion. There is some humor in some of them, say like with a person like Terry Venables, whose life was you know, more joyous, or you know, so with that one I think I did a parody of him singing "I Did It My Way," which is a song I can't stand. I had to listen to about 50 times to you know, get the lyrics and change them. But yeah, so where appropriate, I do like to add some humor. So with the Bobby Charlton one, obviously towards the end of his life, he suffered from dementia. And so I wanted the cartoon to gradually fade to white with his memories of Munich. And I thought it was sort of a reasonably poignant end to that cartoon, and I got a few copies printed off from a local print shop here, and they called me up after I'd submitted the file and said, "Oh, I think there's a mistake because you've left the last panel blank by mistake." And I'm like, "Oh no, that's me, that's me being poignant." And then found myself explaining to someone who had absolutely no interest that, well, Bobby Charlton was his footballer in the 60s, and just going through the whole thing. But yeah, those are the ones that I probably stress about the most, about getting
Yeah.
them right, because obviously, you know, there's a chance that friends or family will read that. Friends or family of the people of the person who's passed away. I would never want to add to anyone's pain, or but thankfully, so far, I've had a positive response to
Yeah.
those kind of strips.
Yeah. What's an entry that you're especially proud of in the last 10 years or so?
It probably would be those obituary style cartoons because yeah, the really the pressure's on to not mess it up and to get it right. I don't want to be too mawkish either. I don't want to sort of go too far into being overly sentimental, and you know, I don't want to You'll never see me adding, Paddington taking someone off to the gates of heaven or anything like that. So, but yeah, those are the ones that I'm probably proudest of. But also there's probably a few where I've just got really silly jokes in that make me laugh, and other people have enjoyed too. So, but really it's the tribute ones, yeah.
Okay, well, we're almost out of time, but what's something that you'd like to try next in your career? Are there any projects burning away? Are there any shifts in gear that you're thinking of, or?
I'd really love the opportunity to bring some of the characters and ideas to life through animation. Something that I've sort of come close to achieving in the past, but it'd be nice to, find the time to get that going again. Really, like all of us, where do you find the time between, your weekly jobs and the 8 hours a day you spend scrolling on your phone? Yeah, how can we find the time? But yeah, that would be nice to bring some of them to life.
What would you have to think about in that way, in that dimension, to shift those characters from something static to something animated? What would you have to think about in the storytelling aspect? Obviously, there's big technical challenges to animating them, and you'd obviously need to bring people on board. But how would you have to think about what works?
You would need, I mean, if we were talking about, say, like Mourinho, Hodgson, Arteta, Rooney, for example, you'd need a premise for where they would be all together. Something, I guess, like Stella Street, that kind of thing. But it wouldn't necessarily need to be those characters. I think there's so many sort of rich, great football stories that could be told through that format that I'd love to see. Especially if I'm commissioned to make it. But it's like anything, sort of trying to break into a new industry and doing something different's incredibly hard. And there's the creeping specter of AI. So, but frankly, I'd be happy to make it through the next sort of 15, 20 years to retirement and still have a job. So that would I'd be happy. I don't want to wish for too much, because if you told me when I was a kid you can make a career from, drawing cartoons about football, then yeah, absolutely would be delighted with that.
Yeah, fantastic. Okay, well, there's three questions that we ask everyone before we let them go. The first is, do you have an origin story or something that sparked your interest in sport in the first place?
Probably wasn't like one lightning bolt moment. I think it was just the gradual drip of the culture, So something happened probably between the 1982 World Cup that I had no interest in when I was seven. Just wasn't on my radar at all. And then by the 1983 FA Cup final, when I was eight, I was all in, like obsessed. And I think it was things like, I heard you talking to Adam Hurley a few weeks ago about the graphics, like the way that the stuff around football, the way that it looks. So it's, Panini stickers and, kits and badges, and it's that stuff. I remember when I first got into football, I didn't really have a team. I hadn't, everyone else seemed to have a team. And there was a trend in the early 80s for these leather sports holders with a team name on the side. It's usually be Manchester United, Liverpool, Arsenal, Spurs. And I asked my mum for one of these, and she said that she'd bring me one back from Swindon Market. Swindon wasn't an option then, by the way. Although I'm a Swindon fan now, I didn't even really, wasn't really aware they had a football team. Anyway, I decided I would support whichever team of the bag that she brought home. And she brought it home, and very excited to reveal it was Notts County,
Oh, wow.
which I didn't even know was a football team. So yeah, I sort of reneged pretty quickly on on that deal with myself. But yeah, I think it was just that slow drip. And it's fair to say that, my junior school wasn't at the vanguard of challenging gender norms. So, if you're a boy, you played football in the back playground, and if you're a girl, you you did whatever that was going on in the front playground. I think my sisters told me it seemed to involve a lot of following around whichever teacher was on lunch duty and asking if she had a boyfriend, which that wasn't my scene. So, gradually started playing football and just found I loved it. And then here we are.
What's your favorite piece of sports storytelling?
I mean, we go back to Viz and Billy the Fish, and I mean that was just sensational. People always assume that I would have been really into Royal Rovers, but I think it sort of passed me by. I think I graduated directly from the Beano to shoot a match, but on sort of more serious things, I always think about Next Goal Wins, the documentary, which is just the perfect football film. If ever I'm feeling, a bit low, I'll stick that on, and that's
Yeah,
great
so
to
this is the
watch.
American Samoa
That's
kind of
right.
overcoming the 31-0 and just
Yep.
trying to get a goal at some point in
Yeah,
their World Cup
yeah.
qualifiers.
That's right. Especially now that I live in Australia as well, where obviously they were really the baddies in that story. They're the ones who inflicted the
When are they
defeat.
not in sports
Well,
stories?
that's it. And yeah, and then in terms of writing, I think back to we were talking about the Charltons a minute ago, and this is maybe recency bias, but Jonathan Wilton's book on the Charlton brothers, the two brothers, is just beautiful. And along the sort of the more sort of fictitious telling of real events, something like The Damned United, which is a book I'll return to, David Peace's book. Actually, I haven't read Munich's yet, which is one on the Munich tragedy, but it's on my bookshelf, waiting to have a crack at that.
Yeah, I need to
So
have a
yeah,
crack at that too.
there's plenty out there.
Finally, you've kind of hinted at it a little bit, but what's a sports story you'd like to tell or see somebody else tell?
I feel that there's like a gap for a really good football, a satire about the football industry. I don't think Ted Lasso. I think the Ted Lasso effect means that we won't get another football TV show, like comedy drama, for 20 years kind of thing, because it's scorched earth now. But I'd love to see, say like someone like Jesse Armstrong or Armando Iannucci do something on the football industry, because oh God, it's an open goal, really. So I'd
No,
love that.
that would be something indeed. Well, David, it's been a real pleasure and a really good start to my day. So thank you very much for taking the time. Look forward to seeing more of your work in the future.
Thank you. Thanks so much for having me.
Outlines is an original production from 2640.